Hello and welcome to a somber, sad Sunday episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I'm your host, Tyler, joined by Matt. And Matt, you know, we were seconds away from a 14-0 emergency pod on Tuesday. If LaSalle could have just made one free throw after that double technical, we would have been on the mic that night, fired up. Instead, we come to you all after just an abysmal weekend. And numbers really don't do justice as to the level of emotional damage that it did to A10 Twitter.
Tyler, you're right. That first night of the season was so much fun. Looked like the conference might be going undefeated. Even LaSalle, I mean, they were ahead most of that game. The Pals were flying throughout Tom Golden Arena. What a choke. And so, because Sacred Heart ended up winning that game in overtime, we didn't get the emergency pod. We're coming to you all a few days late. And in a sense, that first day of the season, things haven't been going the best, I would say. I don't know about you.
It's been brutal. And, you know, this is kind of the perfect time. If this was national talk radio and we were talking about the NBA here, I think we'd be trying to fire up our biggest Monday morning hot takes. Is VCU a pillow fight team? Could Dayton just completely crater and lose all the freshmen to transfers and fire Anthony Grant? But you know what? Twitter has done that enough. So here's my Power 8 hot take of the day.
Ooh, early Power 8 hot take. Okay, let's hear it.
We're fine. Twitter got too hot takey. With one exception. Richmond's defense might have gotten worse. And if it did, they're absolutely not making the tournament.
Yeah, the takes were, man, Richmond. I mean, so Utah State, we can start with Richmond. That was kind of the A-10's first true test, because on Tuesday night, everyone had a home game. Richmond playing Utah State on a neutral court, which could have been, I don't think Utah State's very good, but that's probably a Q2 game, maybe Q3. And just a letdown. Richmond gave up 85 points, made 14 threes of their own, and still lost by double digits. That doesn't happen often. And yeah, the VCU fans especially, I mean, they were in the mentions a bit. They were having some fun. They're not having as much fun now, though. And I guess both fan bases can kind of make fun of each other for now. But yeah, that Richmond game and their defensive struggles, that kind of just kicked off an entire weekend of some bad basketball across the conference.
Yeah, and I think you can justify dropping a bad game for a lot of these teams. Richmond, it's a lot tougher to get to that point, especially when you consider the fact that Golden was incredible. 19 points on 8 of 10 shooting on opening night, 24-8 against Utah State, and Gilliard was the same kind of two-way menace he always is. But the rest of the team was pretty underwhelming. The defense outside of Gilliard was borderline awful. I don't know if there's a fix to that. The one thing that should get better, Nick Sherrod only made 3 shots in the 2 games combined. Presumably, as he gets back into the flow, that will improve. But this is a team that everyone knows each other. The chemistry's down. Mooney has a feel for all these players. They should have come out with a burst of fire. And maybe they still do. Maybe all of a sudden we blink and they're like 8-1, but that Utah State game didn't give any reason to believe. And I'm just going to say it right now. If they lose 3 or 4 non-conference games, there's literally no reason to believe they'll turn around a conference and make the tournament.
No, and I think from Richmond watching the Utah State game, it felt the same as last year. Their offense was great. It was flowing around. You know, Golden did his thing, had a huge game. Gilliard looked great. A couple other guys, too. Tyler Burton made a couple threes, but their defense was just terrible. And it doesn't really matter how great your offense is. If it just seems like every time Utah State goes down the court, it basically, if Gilliard doesn't get a steal, then it's going in. That's Richmond's only defense. If they don't force a turnover, they just leave so many men open on the perimeter. And we already know their interior isn't very strong, especially compared to the rest of the A-10. And once they play good opponents, they're not really capable of shutting teams down at the rim. So they have to defend the perimeter, and they just didn't at all. So, yeah, big disappointment there. And also what you said about Sherrod, that's I don't think he had a full off season to work with. I mean, he suffered an injury about 12 months ago. So that's something I'm really hoping for, that he works back to full strength. But, yeah, he only has 11 points in two games, and he just hasn't looked himself out there. So I was happy that he decided to come back to Richmond. I hope he starts playing better, but they're going to need something out of him, because 2 years ago when they were so great, it really felt like Sherrod was one of the big X factors, being able to hit so many three-pointers and just provide a spark to that team as an efficient shooter.
Yeah, and still really nothing from the bench either, other than some mediocre performance from Matt Grace.
I did like Connor Crabtree, I thought, played pretty well. I think he's actually, you know, he played better defense than most guys, I thought. He had a couple nice plays in transition, but still not much from the bench.
Yeah, well, they're gonna need more from all the bench guys, and really the whole five.
So I don't think we should rip on Richmond too much here. There were some far worse losses across the A-10. Should we just get Dayton out of the way? Because that was just an abysmal performance against UMass Lowell, who might be the true flagship of Massachusetts after that game. I mean, what a terrible night at UD Arena.
So all I'll say here to start this off, this is not that crazy. Now, UMass Lowell is probably a worse team than I expected them to lose to, but I would have been far more shocked if you told me that Dayton made it through the non-con without losing a bye game. For all the reasons we talked about in the offseason, they're the fourth youngest team in all of college basketball. They're going to have to figure out the rotation. You texted me last night that Malachi Smith might be the point guard going forward, and if that's true, then we're going to look back in February at this game and be like, wait, why the hell was Kobe Elvis starting? So, look, they were going to lose a dud bye game. The hope was that it would be to someone relatively decent, like Lipscomb. But, like, this was going to happen. And now we see what happens. They got two more bye games, and then they play Miami. So they got time to start to piece this together. So I'm not going to panic on them, just like how I'm not going to panic on VCU.
Well, I think for Dayton, the young team and just the inexperience as a whole, that's why I was hesitant on the Flyers, why I didn't really expect UD to make the tournament this season. I thought that youth would be too much to overcome. But when you're recruiting these types of players and when you have this type of athleticism, I just don't think it should not take that much to beat UMass Lowell. It shouldn't take that much to beat UIC. And that's a game Dayton very well could have lost. Dayton was down, I think, 9 points with about 8 minutes to go. UIC went on a huge scoring drought that let the Flyers back into the game. They could be 0-2 very easily. And the offense is just a disaster. I think right now Dayton's playing one of the bottom five slowest tempos in the country. And it's not because they're being patient and selective and like running good offense. They're just so passive. They're not moving the ball around. And, you know, they get to the end of the shot clock and they're just throwing up bad shots or turning the ball over. They're just completely out of sync. And I'm hoping that once these guys get used to playing with each other on the court, once they get more experience in the college game, maybe things will come together. But so far, it just hasn't looked like a team of 3- and 4-star recruits, not even close.
It's really weird that Amziel's only played 33 minutes total.
He was not good against UMass Lowell, only three points.
At some point, if you're going to kick the offense into gear, he has to be part of that solution. And especially because they're missing Nokeji right now, which we're deeply entrenched in mystery world with him at the moment. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's academic. We really have no idea. We don't know when he's coming back. but they got a great offensive game from Kamara against UIC. Holmes was great against UMass Lowell. And then other than that, like, who do you really feel like you can rely on at this point? Blakeney was good against UMass Lowell, but we know he's a far better defender at this point. If you just need a spark of scoring, it probably has to come from Omziel. And if it doesn't, then, God, there's a far deeper conversation we have to have here.
Well, I think part of it, the Lowell game, I don't understand how Tamani Kamara only took 2 field goal attempts. He had 4 points in the game. I think we pretty well know that Dayton's not going to have the level of 3-point shooting that they're used to. Omzil's a great shooter. Blakeney's knocked down a couple. Besides that, it's pretty inconsistent. I don't really think anybody's a proven outside shooting threat. I just can't understand how Kamara wasn't a much bigger factor offensively. And it just seems like, you know, whenever he got the ball, he wasn't being aggressive. He seems like the type of guy that would have no problem scoring against a team out of the American East Conference. So I'd like to see him get more involved. I don't really know what happened, but I guess the one high point that you did sort of mention there, I am very impressed by Daron Holmes so far, especially on the defensive end. 6 blocked shots in the last game. Also had 6 offensive rebounds, so he's using his length to his advantage in a big way. He needs to get a little bit more polished around the rim, but once he gets stronger, I think there is a star in the making there. He just needs some help, though. I mean, he can't expect a freshman to do it all himself inside, and Kamara just didn't do enough in the UMass Lowell game.
So we'll keep it brief here. The other kind of troubling teams at the top, stop me if you want to jump in on any of them. VCU, Nunn and Sahonis combined for 2 made field goals against Wagner. Like, without Baldwin and Watkins, they're basically going to lose if that happens. So, as we've known from the beginning, the guard play has to be better for them to be a contender. We'll see how that looks this week. They play Vanderbilt coming up. It'll be a tougher game. Maybe bounce back. The defense just looked outrageous on opening night.
Oh, yeah. I think they had like 9 blocked shots in the first half against St. Peter's. And I was very close to firing out some tweets about how, like, I was right. VCU is going to be fine. You guys were all panicking. And I'm glad I didn't, because now it's not looking as good. I mean, Hassan Ward is still an awesome rim protector. I think he's going to be in the conversation for defensive player of the year. And he had a good game offensively, too, against St. Peter's. Kind of disappeared against Wagner, though. I still think the defense is going to be fine, but their offense is a lot worse than I was expecting.
Yeah, and we'll see. We knew there'd be growing pains with the guards, just like there'd be growing pains with Dayton. My last thought on that, Ward's tip-in to win the St. Peter's game was utter absurdity.
Well,
reach down like that and just kind of flick the ball back up, like, there's maybe 3 guys in the league that can do it.
I mean, that was an amazing play, but I think it also speaks to the fact that just like Dayton, VCU could so easily be 0-2. And I don't want to say that was a lucky tip-in, because I mean, there's a lot of skill in that. Ward is one of the only players that could make that shot. But, yeah, I mean, that went right down to the wire.
What actually won them that game was the 2 steals after that.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no luck involved there. And then for me, the other one, I think people were just kind of quick to jump on it because everyone was just feeling miserable and they sucked in both first halves. Bonaventure didn't have their full starting 5 for either game yet. They won them both. They locked things down in the second half. Come talk to me when they're actually close to losing one of these games.
Well, I do
that's
think
all that's... I got on that. Like, it's week 1. I'm never going to criticize a team for winning by 9. That's a December, January conversation.
No, it's fine, and it's a good thing they won. I do think, though, we have to talk about that. I think in the preseason we both agreed that, well, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I thought Oshun was the most important player in the conference by far, and he's already dealing with an injury.
13 minutes in the
That's a problem that he got hurt in the first game of the year and was limited in the second game. we know how important he was last year and how bad St. Bonaventure was when he got injured 2 years ago. That's something to keep an eye on. See if he's got to get healthy before the Charleston Classic, because St. Bonaventure is going to run into some pretty difficult competition over there. And if they don't have Oshun, Koulibaly's been a pretty decent backup center so far. I think he's been as good as I was expecting, but he's not Oshun. So that's going to be important.
Yeah, I mean, they definitely need him, but we have no reason to believe the injury is going to be a cause for concern. So I'm not worried about the Bonnies.
I just think that the big concern for me, they gave up 15 offensive rebounds against Canisius, which really defensive rebounding wasn't a huge strength last year for St. Bonaventure. They were about average in that regard. But that's just something to keep an eye on. If they're going to struggle on the boards against a team like that, could be rough if Oshun is out for any more games. So hopefully not. Hopefully he gets back quick. One other thing too, just last thing on the Bonnies. Today against Canisius, Linton Brown played 6 minutes. Durosinmi, don't know how to say his name, sorry, he played 2 minutes, and then Quadri Adams played 5 minutes. So I'm not convinced Mark Schmidt's using the bench this year, and we'll see if anything changes. But all year I heard about how they were going to have a deeper bench. It was going to be a game changer. Are we sure about that?
We'll see. I mean, they were down early, and so I wonder if Schmidt did this just because he's trying to make a comeback with the guys that he knows can get it done. But they got a – I don't want to say easy games. They're headed to Charleston this week. They play Boise State. They should be decently favored in that game. So we'll see. We'll see this weekend. They're going to play some tough teams. And three games in one weekend, so we can't really ride them into the ground.
They're going to have to figure something out. They did beat Siena without Jalen Attaway, though. So at least it shows they're not totally reliant on the starting five. And I think Brown got the start of that game and played pretty well, but I don't know. I just still don't. It's not like this is going to be a deep team by any means.
Yeah.
But
so,
go ahead.
Oh, I was going to just move things over to the positive side here.
I think that's a good idea. We got
three teams that have had a maybe not, I actually probably a great week, but at the very least, kind of kept all of our heart rates down. So I'll let you start us off here. St. Louis, George Mason, Rhode Island. Anything to say about those three? Because those were the three that played really well.
Well, St. Louis won their three games by an average of 50. And I have moved on with my Powerade hot take that Bob McKillop has no sportsmanship. Travis Ford's just running up the score on everybody. And no, not really. They've played some bad teams, but look, after the Dayton debacle, it's good to just blow out bad teams. You don't want to keep those games close. So I don't have much on St. Louis. I mean, they're just, you know, they're beating teams that they should and getting a lot of scoring production from different guys, which is good to see. I think the second team, the George Mason, I mean, man, so they're still not playing great competition either, although it has been three Division I opponents. How about this stat, though? First three games of the season, George Mason has won each by 20 points. I saw Kevin Sweeney tweet this out afterward. In Dave Paulson's 6 years, the Patriots won three total non-conference games by 20. So Kim English has already matched that in his first week as a Division I head coach. That's not too shabby.
For me, just kind of want to keep it with two individual guys, because like you said, with both of those teams, the schedule was not great. Josh Oduro was just annihilating people. Really, the whole Mason starting lineup had an impressive week. Deshaun Schwartz was okay in the first game, great in the last two. Xavier Johnson had 7 assists each in back-to-back games. Maybe it's finally happening for him. It's been 2 years since he started showing flashes. I think we all wrote him off last year. I sold basically all my stock in him. there's talent around him. There's Mason's going to be able to score. And moving forward, Johnson's ability to continue to be a top-of-the-line point guard could decide if they're a double-bye contender or not. Because Schwartz and Oduro are both really good, and it looks like Devon Cooper should be a pretty good scorer too. So they're going to need a distributor.
I mean, Mason is – I understand the excitement now. They have been very fun to watch so far. Caught a decent amount of their game against Penn, and I just liked – those guys were playing hard. I'm diving for loose balls in the first half, forcing a ton of pressure and turnovers. I want to formally apologize to Josh Oduro, who I left off my preseason all-conference. I left him off my preseason top 20 players list. I didn't see that kind of jump in him. I thought he'd still be decent, but if it ended right now, he might be your A-10 player of the year through three games. He's been huge in each contest. The other guy I want to mention too, Devontae Gaines, I think is going to be a very fun player to watch. He kind of reminds me of AJ Wilson out there. He just has so much bounce. He's blocked a decent amount of shots already, had some nice dunks, and he went for 15-8 in their most recent game against Morgan State. So I still think Mason's depth is the biggest question, and once they start playing better and deeper opponents, that's going to be a challenge. But I think their starting lineup, as it stands right now, is pretty close to – it's one of the best in the A-10 right now. It's not up there with St. Bonaventure and probably not Richmond, but – from what we've seen in a couple of games, those guys are – it's clicking so far, which you like to see.
Yeah, and I'll turn it over to another candidate for Player of the Week. Gibson Jimerson made 16 twos in three games.
Jeez.
I think we all have just thought of him, and, well, it's not really an eye test thing. The stats will back this up. He was kind of just a catch-and-shoot sniper. And he's added a diversity to his game. Maybe he was kind of just playing a role this whole time. You had Collins, you had Goodwin, you had Perkins, you had French. Gibson Jimerson had to kind of sit back and just wait for the ball to come to him. We talked about before the season, after the Perkins injury, St. Louis needs someone to be their go-to guy on offense. We still got to see Gibson Jimerson do it against real competition, better competition. I don't know how to fully define it, but I certainly didn't think he could do this against anybody. So let's see. They play Memphis Tuesday night.
Yep.
They're going to be playing some NBA-level athletes. Let's see what Gibson Jimerson does in that game. If he scores 20 points and has 6 twos against Memphis – I'm rewriting my all-conference teams.
Yeah, he's looking great so far. How about Yuri Collins, too, who didn't quite match his scoring from the exhibition games, but he's just got a casual 28 assists to 3 turnovers to start the year. So he looks more than capable as St. Louis's point guard. Overall, I'm just most impressed. Like, Gibson Jimerson has stepped up as someone that looks like he might be the lead scorer, but this team really hasn't missed much of anything so far without Javonte Perkins. Their offense has still been very clean in three games. The real test is going to be against Memphis. Can they hang with that type of athleticism, that type of talent? I know Memphis is a really young team, so maybe I don't even know what they've done to start this season, but maybe, you know, they probably haven't reached their peak yet. That's going to be a big challenge, but I'm really interested to see if St. Louis can keep the positive momentum going in against what could be a very good opponent.
Yeah, that'll be a really fun game. Everyone should definitely tune into that. My last thing in the positives, Rhode Island, which is a team that I still feel like I have no grasp on, but there's 7 key guys, basically each played one really good game of their first two. Not really an individual superstar showing, but to me, the key stat, 60 foul shots taken in 2 games. This is a team that couldn't get to the rim whatsoever last year if it wasn't Fats Russell. That's an absurd number of free throws. If their offense is really going to run through the paint and through getting to the line in a year where it seems like the A-10 doesn't have quite the number of interior defensive beasts that they have, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Rhodey's a top half team. They certainly played like it this week.
I mean, yeah, it's a similar case to some other teams. They haven't played the best competition yet, but from what we've seen from
Ryan should be solid this year, though.
Yeah, they're not bad, and same with Boston University. They're usually okay. Like, they're decent mid-majors, but I mean, when you see what some of what we thought the contenders could be, what they were doing this week, to see Rhode Island escape the first two games with some pretty comfortable wins. I think the Boston game was kind of close, but they really pounded Bryant in the second half. That's what you like to see early in the season, so you're right. No, like, huge individual performances, but seems like they've got a decent amount of options, and they might be a more well-rounded team this year with a lot of guys that can score, so I'm impressed. And also, too, I mean, their guards have been playing well, which I think is what the biggest question mark was, because we were expecting a lot from the Mitchell twins and Antoine Walker, but, you know, Bagot's been good so far. El Amin has had some nice games. Shepard's pretty much done the same as what we were used to, so just overall, a lot of guys contributing for the Rams.
Yeah, and El Amin's barely shot the ball so far, so we'll see. He's certainly being a team player. He had some poor efficiency numbers at Ball State. He's been the opposite in the first two games here. But closing thoughts, any other teams or players that you feel like we're just inappropriately neglecting for good or bad in this episode?
I just have a couple, like, good standout performances I want to shout out. Foster Lawyer had 27 in the first game against Delaware for Davidson, 6 for 6 on threes. And then Sam Menenga, who we were talking about quite a bit this preseason, he scored 13 and 14 in his two games so far, and he's also averaging 9.5 rebounds, so he looks good. Joe Bamisiel had 20 points for GW in each of their first two games, and all of a sudden he's kind of replaced James Bishop as the lead dog on that team, with Bishop really struggling.
Yeah, he might actually just be better.
I mean, so far, you know,
he definitely looked it in the St. Francis game.
Well, in his first half against Maryland, you know, leading GW that game, he had the windmill dunk. I mean, he was firing that team up. I really think he could be a leader for the Colonials. And then also, I really liked Ajike Obina against Mount St. Mary's. He had 16 and 15. And it's just wild to see St. Joe's play with a center. They actually have someone that can play physical. And we just haven't seen that since we've done the podcast. He really is their first center in 4 years, it feels like. So those are the main guys, though, that I've been impressed by so far.
I'll close it out with this. We declared before the season that this is a new era, and we will not just give Fordham shit for no reason. Fordham's kind of fun. In a comparison of Fordham has been utterly unwatchable for like the last 6 years. The Quisenberry Day backcourt combination is the best that they've had since before Neubauer. And, you know, Fordham's been a train wreck for a long time, but it's been two games, and I'm pretty sure that Neubauer took the train that was riding off the tracks and just poured gasoline all over it and then flamethrowered it. Like, Kyle Neptune has actually, like, made them look respectable here. And I'm pretty sure that by January, Darius Quisenberry is going to drive me insane, because I think he might be a crazy gunner. But at the moment, he's just an interesting guard who can actually, like, make pull-up jumpers, and Fordham hasn't had that in so long. Ohams is actually healthy. God knows how long that'll last, but he was running over some small Metro Atlantic centers this week. And, you know, I willingly chose to watch the second half of the Fordham-Manhattan game. And I didn't feel like an idiot for doing it. That hasn't happened since this pod started.
I'm excited. I have not seen Fordham play yet, although I am happy to to look at the stats and see that they are playing a little bit more up-tempo, so that should be more entertaining. Chuba Hohams is averaging 16.5 rebounds, so seems like he's returned in full force, and I've just loved watching him play for years, so happy for him to be healthy. And you know, Fordham, you're right, they're still not very good, but they should at least be more fun. I'm excited to see how this team develops over the course of the season, and you know, I'm wishing them the best, because they made a good coaching change, and it would just be good for the conference if they started playing better. So you know, glad they were able to pick up a win on opening night.
So I think that just about does it for opening week.
Can we stop talking about tournament bids? I'm so tired of people coming at us and being like, oh, change your name, not going to be three bids. It's been a week. Like, everyone's played two games, three games.
Yeah, because
give it a couple months. How about that?
Well, also, 3 years ago, like, at the end of non-conference, it was looking like a lock to be a one-bid league. And then VCU just beat the crap out of everybody for 2 months and ended up with, what, a 9 seed, I think?
8 or 9, yeah.
Yeah, like, let's calm it down. Especially because we still have no reason to believe that the Bonnies are going to struggle at all.
And George Mason might just be, like, the 12th best team in the country. No, I'm kidding.
I'm saying this without hyperbole in any way. Like, there's reason to believe that SLU might be really, really good.
Well, hey, I will tell you what.
And yeah. So, I mean, we'll see after that Memphis game. But if they hang with Memphis, I'm going to start spouting irrational things on Twitter.
Well, I'll tell you what. I think there's three big games I'm keeping an eye on this week. The first one, St. Louis versus Memphis on Tuesday night. You know, on the road at the FedEx Forum, I'm not expecting St. Louis to win. But if they keep it close, that would be a really good sign. And St. Louis also, I know I made fun of them for just scheduling three cupcakes and blowing them all out, but the rest of their non-conference is very formidable. So they have a chance. That they have plenty of opportunities to build a resume. George Mason plays Maryland on Wednesday. Again, not expecting a win at all, but Maryland has looked vulnerable. I mean, they were struggling against GW. They didn't beat Vermont by very much the other night, so you never know there. And then we really didn't talk about Davidson that much, but they blew out a pretty decent Delaware team that might be the favorite in the CAA, and then also played San Francisco very close, and that's going to be a bubble team out of the West Coast Conference. The Wildcats get New Mexico State in the opener of the Myrtle Beach Invitational on Thursday, and New Mexico State's like a perennial 13 seed, decent mid-major, so that's going to be a good test. And I feel like Davidson has kind of sneakily been one of the more solid teams through the first week, so those are the three games. If the A-10 could somehow pick up a win or two, especially in the Memphis and Maryland games, that would be huge.
Saturday, I need Richmond to go out and just take care of business against Drake.
Yeah, I need some confidence.
You need to go win that. Like, hey, Richmond, quite frankly, you sucked in the Utah State game. Go beat a good mid-major here. You got four fifth-year guys on your team. It's time to start taking care of business.
Can I throw an over-under at you real quick before we end this? Over-under 1.5 wins for Dayton this week. They play Lipscomb and Austin Peay.
Over. They'll right the ship. The bigger question is, can they beat a mediocre Miami team on Thanksgiving Day? That's the bigger question here.
I hope so. Not feeling great about it, but only up from here. So, all right, I'm feeling better about the A-10 already. You know what? Tough couple of days here for the conference, but there's a lot of good basketball ahead. So don't let the first week ruin your season as a fan. There's so many good games coming up, and just trying to have a good attitude about it all.
Yep. Things are going to be quite all right. So that does it for the opening week recap episode of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, if you enjoyed the show, give us 5 stars on iTunes. Leave us a review. Send anything to us on Twitter at @3BidLeaguePod if you have any comments. Everybody stay safe out there, and please just enjoy this week. There was too much misery last week. Let's be a little bit more positive until things go really badly Monday, Tuesday again.